De WikiLeaks, portal que ha revelado a la opinión pública millones de documentos clasificados de Estados Unidos y corporaciones privadas, ha estado bajo arresto domiciliario desde hace 500 días. Sin embargo, eso no le ha impedido a lanzar su programa El Mundo del Mañana a través de la televisora rusa RT.
This week, I am joined by a guest from a secret location in Lebanon. I want to know why is he called a freedom fighter by millions? And at the same time, a terrorist by millions of others.
Julian Assange inició su programa el martes con una entrevista a Sayed Hassan Nasrallah, líder de Hezbollah. Dice que le interesa conocer cómo el líder musulmán, cuya agrupación se ha enfrentado en numerosos combates con Israel y que forma parte del Parlamento libanés, puede ser considerado por millones como un liberador y al mismo tiempo como terrorista por otros millones. RT cubrió las reacciones a favor y en contra sobre el primer programa de Julian Assange, incluyendo opiniones de la corporación de derecha Fox, donde se han escuchado llamados para su asesinato. A continuación, parte del reporte de RT News.
Un traidor imprudente, un idiota, un agente del Kremlin. En los medios occidentales abundaron estos calificativos para referirse al estreno del programa de Julian Assange en RT. Su visión del mundo del mañana pareció molestar a otros periodistas y medios que les acusan de llevar a cabo una misión antiestadounidense.
Este tipo es un traidor que ha violado todas las leyes de Estados Unidos. Le deberían... A ver, yo estoy en contra de la condena de muerte. Por eso deberíamos matar ilegalmente a ese hijo de...
La cuestión es que Assange es un agente ruso cuya misión antiestadounidense ahora se realiza de forma abierta para que la vean todos.
Pero el fundador de WikiLeaks, que se convirtió en el enemigo número uno de los medios estadounidenses, afirma que su programa llega a Moscú ya montado y editado, por lo que nadie puede realizar cambio alguno.
Dirán, aquí está Julian Assange, luchador enemigo, traidor, entrando a la cama con el Kremlin haciendo entrevistas a radicales terribles de todo el mundo. Pero yo creo que este es un ataque a mi persona, bastante trivial. Si miran cómo está hecho el programa, verán que nosotros lo producimos y tenemos el control editorial completo.
El primer invitado de Assange fue el líder del grupo Hezbollah, Sayed Hassan Nasrallah, quien explicó que su organización apoya al presidente sirio porque Damasco se mantiene firme y no ha sucumbido ante la presión de Estados Unidos e Israel. Para muchos analistas, esta entrevista es un paso importante hacia el pluralismo periodístico.
Creo que es un avance muy importante en que el mundo pueda informarse sobre temas fundamentales, no solamente escuchando un par de voces que son las occidentales, sino escuchando otras voces alternativas que van a permitir formar una opinión más equilibrada y más amplia de la realidad de las cosas que están ocurriendo hoy en el mundo.
Y mientras los medios norteamericanos no dejan de criticar una supuesta falta de integridad de Assange, su programa despierta opiniones completamente opuestas en otras partes del continente.
Felicitaciones a RT. Este programa va a ser una revolución para los medios occidentales, acostumbrados a tener una única visión estandarizada.
Si tanto Estados Unidos como la Unión Europea y la OTAN defienden la libertad de expresión, ¿por qué ahora quieren censurar todo, controlar lo que uno escribe, dice y guarda? Aquí hay gato encerrado.
Pero la libertad de expresión no significa la libertad física para Julian Assange. El fundador de WikiLeaks prepara su programa mientras permanece bajo arresto domiciliario en el Reino Unido y lucha por no ser extraído a Suecia y después posiblemente a Estados Unidos. Miles de cables secretos sobre las guerras en Irak y Afganistán filtrados por su portal web siembran incertidumbre sobre su propio mañana.
Va a haber tentativas para silenciarlo, inclusive en algunos casos. Espero que la seguridad del señor Assange esté bien, bien armada, porque ya va a ser contra él personalmente, como lo hicieron con todos estos simulacros de juicios, estos arrestos que él está sufriendo, este pedido de extradición por parte de Suecia, todo bajo presión ya no de Suecia, sino obviamente de Estados Unidos, Gran Bretaña y algunos países de la Unión Europea.
Yelena Milunčić, RT, Moscú.
El diario Los Angeles Times publicó este miércoles 18 de abril fotos de soldados estadounidenses posando con pedazos de cadáveres afganos, provocando indignación en Afganistán, expresiones de sorpresa de parte de las autoridades castrenses, acalorado debate entre los norteamericanos civiles. Según el diario angelino, las fotos publicadas son parte de 18 que recibió de un soldado que pidió anonimato. Las fotos fueron tomadas en 2010 después de que miembros de la 82ª División Aerotransportada fue enviada a inspeccionar los cadáveres de afganos que supuestamente habían muerto en una explosión. Algunos soldados posaron para las fotos con una sonrisa y otros junto a las piernas desmembradas de los afganos. Joyce Riley es vocera de la Asociación de Veteranos de la Guerra del Golfo. Ella dice que cometiendo esas atrocidades o revelando información sobre ellas a los medios provoca gran indignación entre la población afgana. Riley es una ex capitana de la Fuerza Aérea Estadounidense y como tal habla con autoridad sobre las responsabilidades de la tropa. Ella anota que la 82ª División de Tropas Aerotransportadas no permite que unos soldados hagan lo que se les antoja simplemente porque así son los hombres. Sin duda, dice, ahí hay comandantes que están ordenando eso o están motivando a la tropa para que lo haga. Los actos revelados en las fotos publicadas han sido condenados por el vocero del ejército, el comandante de las fuerzas de ocupación en Afganistán, el vocero del Pentágono y el secretario de Defensa. Riley señala que las recientes revelaciones sobre quema de libros sagrados musulmanes, masacres y faltas de respeto a cadáveres de afganos bien pudieran estar encaminadas a justificar la permanencia de las fuerzas de ocupación. Añade que el anuncio de que habrá un desalojo de las fuerzas ocupantes para 2014 son solo palabras huecas. Estados Unidos no piensa salirse de Afganistán y se quedará allí de la misma forma que siguen diciendo que ya se salieron de Irak, pero su presencia se mantiene en el país árabe.
You have a situation that is being done by design. Either you have commanders over there that are so inept.
En Afganistán existe una situación que responde a un diseño, dice. O tienen comandantes tan ineptos que no saben cómo liderar a sus tropas, o están obedeciendo órdenes, pues no es común que el cuerpo castrense se convierta en un renegado y empiece a cometer atrocidades a menos que estas sean sus órdenes. Riley señala que Washington nunca entretuvo la idea de desocupar Afganistán, pues se ha invertido demasiado dinero en ese lugar, entre otras cosas, se ha invertido en grande en la industria del narcotráfico, y lo que está detrás es el acceso y adquisición de recursos naturales.
We go wherever there are resources that the United States wants to obtain.
Riley dice que las tropas norteamericanas van a los lugares donde hay recursos que Washington quiere y a veces hablan de una insurgencia o de unos rebeldes. Los norteamericanos dan asistencia a los rebeldes y después van allí como los buenos vecinos que llegaron a resolver el problema y poner un alto a las atrocidades. Washington crea el problema en el país, luego llega y se apodera de él y con ello crece el poder imperial y Estados Unidos posee otra nación más bajo su control. La vocera de la Asociación de Veteranos de la Guerra del Golfo dice que ahora le están haciendo al África lo mismo que le han hecho al Medio Oriente, y siempre se trata de los recursos, ya sean estos gas, petróleo, oro o cualquier otro. Hablando sobre los restos humanos usados como trofeos en las fotos publicadas por el Times, Riley dice que ella no cree que esos afganos hayan sido guerrilleros. Más bien, ella piensa que las tropas de ocupación están allí matando solo por el fin de quitar la vida a otra gente. La ex oficial de la Fuerza Aérea Norteamericana habla de la llamada Unidad 212, un grupo especializado que se dedica solo a matar, y las redadas nocturnas que hacen tienen el mismo objetivo, asesinar afganos. Luego, refiriéndose a las fuerzas del Tratado del Atlántico Norte, la OTAN, que supuestamente están en Afganistán para llevar la paz, a juzgar por sus acciones, la OTAN representa a la gente más incivilizada e inhumana en el país asiático. El mes pasado, 17 afganos, entre ellos 9 niños, fueron masacrados en sus casas en medio de la noche. La matanza fue atribuida por las autoridades militares al sargento Robert Bales, pero la periodista australiana Yalda Hakim, pese a objeciones de los norteamericanos, entrevistó a niños y adultos sobrevivientes, quienes aseguraron que como 15 o 20 soldados habían participado en los crímenes. En Los Ángeles, yo soy Fernando Velázquez. Thank you.
hemos llegado al final de otra edición del Informativo Pacífica. Nuestro agradecimiento a todos los medios que hicieron posible este programa. A nombre del director del proyecto, Fernando Velázquez, se despide Norma Martínez. Gracias por su atención.
And of course you're listening to Freak. Freak Radio 101.1 FM, Free Radio Santa Cruz. And actually it's 101.3. We've gone a little bit to the right, at least on the dial. So stay tuned for the next 2 hours for Bathrob Spears Broadsides. That's going to be going to have a special guest on the air who will introduce herself shortly, as well as lots of stuff from the Project Connect Day that happened last Tuesday, and numerous other interviews, and more on the usual civil rights catastrophes going on in Santa Cruz right before your very eyes, and you wouldn't even know it. So stay tuned.
You never asked, I never swore. So get your hands off my back when I will show myself a door. Cause all you wanted from me, you stole it. It wasn't mine, though, I was just holding it. I held my tongue so long, now it's swollen. But the truth must still be told. And though the words still heavy as lead in my head, they turn to gold when spoken. And I'm sorry, but I just gotta take a stand here. And I'm sorry, I gotta get out while I still can. I really wanted you to be more than just a dream. But I'm waking
And that was a little something from a street musician who also has got an album out, or I should say a disc. Carrie Gulbranson, I played her before. Jezebel's Daughter is the name of the disc, and the actual number was undiscovered. Well, welcome to Free Radio Santa Cruz. I'm setting up my guest here. It looks like a big mic for a short guest, but belly up to the mic there, Kate. And you, about an inch away is the right way to be. And let's say something so we can see, actually hear you.
Say something so you can actually hear me.
Hey, there you go. So I think we can hear you. So what I'm going to be doing throughout this show is, Kate will be with us for as long as she wants to be. I'm going to be going through various tapes, of course, taking your calls. And I talk mainly... when I feel like talking at all, and sometimes I just don't feel like going, I feel more going, it becomes a little hard to speak, but I will keep trying. And maybe you can help me out there because you have access to the phone lines. And the phone number here is 427-3772. And of course, we're talking about Free Radio Santa Cruz. So I guess what I'm going to begin with is introducing my guest, and again, we're going to be rolling into a lot of tapes, and Kate, if you want to hang and listen, make comments, and relate it to things you may have seen around the community or experiences you've had yourself, that would be great. I'm even going to be playing a little bit from the reading of Victor Hugo's Les Miserables, a famous 19th century novel that I was... hooked on when I was a kid, though I read the expurgated edition with all the historical stuff in it at the time was just too much for me, but really moved me, that Bishop's Candlestick stuff. Folks may be aware of Les Miserables through the movies or through the book, and also, of course, through the musical Les Mis, which was famous about 25 years ago. Where can you hear the people sing, singing the song of angry men, you know, that sort of thing. So, we can all sing along with Robert or whatever. And I guess I'll begin by saying that I think I've talked to you before, Kate, but I think you came to Occupy Santa Cruz 3 or 4 months ago with some concerns you had, and I'm going to try to see if they have some broad relevance to other people, as they probably do. But let's begin by having you talk about. What brought you to Occupy Santa Cruz looking for help so many months ago?
Well, I was in the county jail for 70 days. I was in lockdown for a month. And when I was released, I had nowhere to go, no money, no car, no identification. And there was Occupy going on, which I had been listening to it. I was on Blaine Street at the Women's Corrective Facility for the latter part of my imprisonment. And I joined Occupy because I really had nothing better to do, but also because I really felt it was the right place for me to be. I've been homeless for the last year. I've a restraining order from my home. My husband's Larry Ira Perlin, and I have 2 daughters I haven't seen in a year. So Occupy was a place for me to connect with Mr. Norris and other people in our community and to let them know that I felt like I'd been done wrong. And I had been jailed for a misdemeanor that turned into a felony, a misdemeanor. It was dropped, and then I have 4 years probation, and I was charged with child abuse. And this restraining order was a week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks. It's now been a year. I'm not allowed to speak to my children. I went to Occupy to say I just didn't feel safe, and no one was listening to me. And the police were kind to me. They were supportive. They were devastated that I was imprisoned for so long. And I've written letters to the governor, to the president, to Dianne Feinstein, to Leon Panetta. I've Facebooked. I've Googled K-Pig Radio, Alice Cooper at Nights with Alice, and written numerous letters to Don Miller, the Santa Cruz Sentinel, to the Mid-County Post. I've telephoned hundreds of people, screamed that my children were molested, that I've been removed from my home for slapping my daughter across the face for using very foul language. I've never been away from my children in their entire lives. Today I learned that one of my daughters has been in trouble with the law. She's 13 years old. She's distraught. She's bored, she's depressed, and my 15-year-old is hanging on by a string. My 31-year-old son, Jared Genovese, who stays home and watches the children as much as he can, he's also running on empty. And there seems to be no representation for these children who want to see their mother. Child Protective Services, who I have written to, the manager, Jenny, who charged me with child abuse through Harbor High School, has not responded to my calls. I've attended appointments where nobody has shown up, and I've left after a couple hours. I've written to her several times. I wrote to her from jail. No one has responded. Or if they have, Larry Ira Perlin somehow prevented my mail. I had a change of address to a P.O. box in Soquel, and never did I receive a piece of mail. So I then changed it to Santa Cruz P.O. box, didn't receive mail. So I went to the Postal Service and said, what the heck is going on? Someone fixed it, but no one explained to me how, why, or what had happened. The same with my passport was stolen, my driver's license, everything, my Social Security, everything I own, my car, my clothes, everything I own has been put into storage or stolen. And no one seems to be able to help me correct this. And meanwhile, these children are being abused. They don't have their mom. I missed both of their birthdays, 13th birthday, 15th birthday, missed all the holidays. Mother's Day is coming up. My birthday's come and gone. And no one has a voice for these children. If I call the house, I will be arrested, which I have been. If I write a letter to Larry Perlin, which I did, asking for some kind of resolution, he turned it into the sheriff's. I was rearrested, a warrant put out for my arrest. And then I went to the house one day to see my son, and it was a school day, and my 15-year-old happened to be home, which was very much by mistake. I saw her. She was delighted to see me. We embraced and talked, and then I asked her where her father was. She said Larry Ira Perlin was in town. I said, please call him so that if he comes home, I can leave so we don't have an encounter. She called him, and he called the police immediately. I was re-jailed, rebooked. And $2,000 bail, which I've lost all the money because the credit card I used was canceled because all the credit cards I have in my name have been maxed out. And I have no money. I have nothing. I have no car. My last car was vandalized. Salt put down the radiator. The hoses were cut. I was in Utah. I abandoned the car, got a flight home. Got my old car back, which Larry had put into storage, and then that runs like crap after I put several hundred dollars into it. So I'm selling that. I'm living at a park. I don't have a cell phone and I have a laptop because those were stolen at Occupy. While I was at Occupy, if I dare say, I saw appalling things, and I wrote to numerous people, and photographs were taken. I saw police officers, men in uniforms, women in uniforms, stealing identification, stealing marijuana, stealing backpacks, stealing tents, stealing wheelchairs, stealing walkers. People were desolate. I saw homeless people being ticketed for open containers, for smoking marijuana, for smoking cigarettes, for having a dog, for riding their bikes down the wrong way on a one-way street. But riding their bikes when there was no pedestrians. I saw harassment. I saw people beat. But dare I say, I also saw a young girl giving oral sex to a police officer. I saw this, and I reported it. I was appalled. Occupy was closed down, I believe, for the safety of the homeless people, who, there's controversy regarding that. Were they good or were they not? It's a matter of opinion. I found a lot of power in them. I found a lot of wisdom in them. I found a lot of courage in them. And most part, I found just a bunch of pot smokers that had a hell of a lot of stories to tell about the 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s, up until the 21st century. I was appalled at what I heard and how things have gotten worse rather than better. I mean, here we suffered the Vietnam War. I mean, forget Korea, World War I, World War II. Here we've got Vietnam. Then we've got the Gulf War. Then we have, you know, Afghanistan. Then we have weapons of mass destruction. We have 9/11. We have banks stealing money. I mean, I had accredited back to my Visa a charge that I made at a enterprise car rental. It's been held up for 5 days, $300. Instead of them crediting it back within 24 hours or even 48, this money is held for 5 days, At whose expense? Mine. I had no money. I had nowhere to go. I had no place to sleep. I lived in a woman's shelter, woman's crisis center, and a homeless shelter in Cedar City, Utah, for 5 days. These people took care of me. They fed me. They filed all the reports. And nothing is being done. I mean, there's like, everybody has their hands up in the air. Who is this Larry Ira Perlin, the building official of the city of Palo Alto, the president of the Live Oak School District for the last 9 years, the interim member of the Planning Commission of Santa Cruz County, the once president and now active board member of the Santa Cruz County Land Trust? Who is this man? John Leopold had no idea I was homeless. The Live Oak School District teachers had no idea I was homeless. Yet, the superintendent, Tamara Taylor, put a restraining order against me, stating that she feared me, and I could not go to either Harbor High School, Shoreline High School, or anywhere near the Live Oak School District office. If I were to go to any of those locations, I would be arrested. No one explained that to me, and no one will tell me what's going on with any of these restraining orders. And I have written 200 letters to Tamara Taylor with no response except, "Oh, Larry, why is your wife angry at me? I came to her birthday party that she invited me to on March 8th, 2011. What's up, Larry?" And Larry tells me not to speak poorly of this woman, as I could destroy her career. But why, is the president of the school board's wife restrained from seeing her children? I've raised thousands of dollars for the Del Mar School District. You can ask countless teachers. I've raised money for Cypress. I've raised money for Live Oak. I've raised a lot of money for Shoreline. I support the parents, the Live Oak neighborhood. I'm an advocate of blending the Hispanics and the whites, and all of us be peaceful. I support everything. I'm an advocate of peace. I'm an advocate of, you know, child abuse prevention. I'm an advocate of safe sex. I'm an advocate of politics and free speech. And what I've seen in this community is appalling. I have spent countless hours, and I'm sure many of you have seen me, on street corners on Ocean Street, showing off my red panties, hanging signs, screaming, "Blackbird singing in the dead of night." Seabright, I saw the United Nations. I saw countless scholars from Oxnard, from all over the world, here in Santa Cruz County. I insulted them. They said nothing back to me. I insulted them at Eric's Deli. I threw water at one of them. And then I bent the windshield wipers of two of them who were following me, and I was afraid. I was arrested for that as a felony. Stuck in jail for 70 days. It's dropped as a misdemeanor. I have 4 years of probation. I need to pay $40 a month. I need to report to a probation officer monthly. I need to fill out a report card. I have an attorney I hired at the tune of $2,000. I hired him to help me proceed with a divorce. But what he's gotten trapped in is this civil issue of my being on probation and a criminal. So he's done bullshit with my divorce. I have no spousal support. I have no money. I have nothing. And I don't get to see my kids. They don't get to see me. They don't get to talk to me on the phone. If I email them, I get arrested. So while he's dealing with this, Larry Perlin continues to deny me a home. I own two homes. One of the homes, the tenant that was there for several years, Carmen, everyone knows her at the Live Oak School District, Tina Salinas and everyone. She was an outstanding tenant, never late with her rent once, paid top dollar for a two-bedroom, $2,100 a month at 600 17th Avenue. I went there to talk to her today. She's not there. The property is locked up. Why can't I move into that property? I've been asking to for the last year. Larry said no. I asked for my car back. Larry said no. I asked for my clothes, my jewelry, my books, my journals. Larry said no. I asked for money, for my identification. I went to the Department of Motor Vehicles to get a new ID, and I wasn't given one. I sat there for 4 hours while my number was neglected time and time again until I left and I wrote to Phil Gomez at KSBW Channel 8 News and said, "Mr. Gomez, something is really wrong here." I went to use a phone booth to call 911 and it didn't answer. I used it many times 411, charged me 75 cents. I lost my money. And then it spoke to me in Spanish and said if I were Spanish-speaking, it would charge me less. And that was just asinine. I mean, it was like, well, I do speak Spanish, but you don't seem to speak Spanish. The same thing happened to me in Monterey, Pacific Grove, Carmel, Davenport, Half Moon Bay. This is a true story. I walked the whole Highway 1. Thousands of people saw me. I saw hundreds of really bad, awful people. I saw people in the ocean. I called Fred Devine. You know, if any of you know who he is, he's a water explorer. He looks for things in the water that are suspicious. He came. I stayed at the Best Western for $12,000 worth. I was banned from California Best Westerns because I wrote on a wall a peace sign and paid $750 to have it repaired. Yet when I went to get my four nights that I had earned for free, they said, "You're banned from California Best Westerns." Please. Any questions?
Well, that's a mouthful there, Kate.
Thank you.
And I think if anybody wants to call in and comment as to whether, you know, we should lock you up and gag you and put you in the corner or perhaps lift you up and carry you to City Hall, you can. The phone number here is 427-3772. And I've got to say, you know, I haven't researched anything you've said, so I can't vouch for it, nor can I contradict it. So, you know, it is, it's a story, as far as I'm concerned, that, you know, which I guess the audience has to be the judge of the credibility of your story. You know, that's, it's difficult to prove your story if you haven't got money, ID, and that sort of thing, or people who are actually interested in listening. That's, of course, also the problem. I'm going to do a brief musical break and stuff a few things in my mouth because I'm a little hungry. And I'll be back, and we'll all be back. Again, the phone number here is 427-3772, 427-FRSC. You are tuned to Freak Radio Santa Cruz. And we are broadcasting at 101.3 and streaming, too, if only you knew the stream.
Drive.
That was another number from Music from the Streets by Kerry Gulbranson. That one was called Rose. So, Kate stepped out of the studio briefly to have a smoke, I think. And I'm going to begin now with a few street interviews to catch up on. I have don't want to fall behind. Actually, I'm not too far behind, so I don't feel too bad about that. Before I do, a couple of announcements, though. There's a number of events happening. I've been posting a bit about it on IndieBay.org, Santa Cruz Indie Media, the website I frequently go to post my propaganda, my thoughts, my complaints, my information, too, reports I get. And so you might want to check there if you want to kind of give a fuller analysis of what I'm saying or stories I bring up on the show. So tomorrow is the 20th of April, and tomorrow, of course, is a, if tradition is any guide, a big shindig up at UCSC around 4:20, the smokeout that happens around the attempt to decriminalize marijuana or simply to celebrate marijuana, depending on how you want to view it. I've written a little description of what seems to be coming up. I call it a felonious hearing, a smoky day, and a smart protests are coming up. And the felonious hearing, of course, is a hearing for 7 of the Santa Cruz 11 folks charged with walking into the vacant bank on Front Street way back in November. And they're charged with multiple felonies and misdemeanors, trespass, vandalism, and so forth, even though there's no evidence I've seen yet of any actual vandalism committed by any of the individuals who are charged. Also, there's conspiracy to commit vandalism. That's a pretty serious bunch of charges. I've talked about them in the past. And they're going to be appearing in court tomorrow, 7 of them, 7 of the Santa Cruz 11. The four who won't be appearing will be myself, Becky, Alex DeRosi, and Bradley Stewart, who actually, we got our preliminary hearings, well, the last two had their preliminary hearing, which is the hearing in which the judge decides whether to pass on these fabricated felonies that Bob Lee is imposing upon us, or stamping on our foreheads, or branding into our chests, or anyway, that's actually, the community is paying a lot of money for this, too. It's a pretty ridiculous situation, as I said before, and a pretty serious one, too, for us, because we face up to 7 years apiece in prison as a potential maximum for these 7 felonies. At least that's my estimate of the moment. A little uncertain whether the felony maximum is 3 years or more, but if it's 3 years, that's a total of 7 years with two felonies and two misdemeanors. The preliminary hearing, as I said, is going to be coming up for 7 people. That includes Gabriella Brent Adams, Gabriella Ripley Phillips is her last name, for those who wonder. Two people that I don't really know, Ed Rector and Cameron Lorendeau, Desiree Foster, and Brent Adams, as well as Angel. And these folks are all facing, the proposal is to go into a preliminary hearing the beginning of next week, which I continue to predict will be postponed because the district attorney's office under Paul Lee, while it seems to have the time and resources to post photos and videos on its own website inviting the community to, well, essentially to snitch out more people who are actually at that. And there were 300 people in and out of the building, but anyone that they wish to bring down to the DA's office for possible prosecution, which is really kind of a, it's really a phony procedure because the DA's office has plenty of names if they want to charge people, even names as politically exalted as Catherine Byers, former mayor and city councilwoman, who was not only on the property as Mayor Don Lane was, but actually in the building itself for a fairly extended period of time, as I understand it from reports I've kind of noted secondhand, as well as police reports. So the issue is really not whether the community is going to come forward with more names to fit the video that the police took. It is rather, why is the district attorney going ahead to attack 11 individuals, six of them, is it five or six, bloggers, reporters, journalists, and all of them activists, who there's no evidence of vandalism whatsoever, and for many, not really any evidence of any... Well, there's no evidence that's been given to any of us of a conspiracy, but yet we are being charged with that, which is a felony, a serious and a difficult to defend against thing. You think conspiracy means, you know, you got together in a room and whispered about something, decided to commit a crime, then went out and did it. No, that's not how they define conspiracy. It's the way the district attorney, Rebecca Young, who is the underling of Bob Lee, who's doing this procedure, defines it as if you walk on the property, that is the conspiracy. You do it together. That indicates conspiracy. So that's all going to be happening 9 o'clock tomorrow morning, if you want to go down and check. It's really, as I said, a kind of an empty hearing, because I suspect the district attorney is going to say, oh, I left the videos at home. I was still trying to sort them out. She's been saying this for months. And it makes me wonder why. I can't believe they're that incompetent. I have to believe they have some reason to withhold these videos, and I don't really know what that reason is at the moment, but we were able to get a postponement of our preliminary hearing. We did this, went through the same process a week ago, and we got moved into mid-May, which is where we're looking at now, and all still trying to get the video and the information from the district attorney. So what happens tomorrow is likely to be really an occasion to get together to talk to the seven defendants, or to be sympathetic and supportive of them, because they are all ordered to appear, all seven of the 11. And some of us will be there probably just in solidarity. I know I'll be there. I suspect Becky will be there. And it's likely that Alex DeRosi and Bradley, who are reporters and journalists, And that was the capacity that they were at with the 75 River Street, is my understanding, will also be there. So come on down, 9 o'clock, Department 6, if you're interested, tomorrow morning. Looks like, Kate, you have a comment. You're making feverishly, or you're scrawling notes over there. What's this all about?
Well, my experience when I was in jail, I mean, was I had to, not only was I in lockdown for a month with no toothbrush, no glasses, and no time out. I was supposed to get an hour out every 2 days, but I got an hour out every 4 days, if I was lucky. And when they finally let me out of lockdown, or rack as they call it, and I went to Blaine Street, you know, I was under 24/7 watch. I had to do testing of my urine and cough.
You know, actually, let me interrupt you, because this is something I want to, I mean, I'm interested in this, but we're talking right now about the preliminary hearing readiness that's coming up tomorrow for these seven defendants. Is there something you wanted to say about that, or is this relevant to that? How is this related?
Absolutely. There's definitely corruption going on. I mean, I don't understand the integrity or the competence of Bob Lee or Rebecca Young or the district attorney's office or the public defenders. I was jailed, and I'm a homeowner. And other people, as I sat in court, who had abused their wives or their children, who were homeowners, were not given public defenders and had to hire their own counsel. I was given a public defender. No one bothered to check on who I was and my credibility. Child Protective Services, the court, sheriffs, the judge, nobody said, Kathleen Jean Perlin, aren't you the person who did, you know, the American Red Cross big wave and raised money for Capitola in Santa Cruz County? Aren't you the ex-owner of Rent-A-Wife Housekeeping? Aren't you?
Again, we're kind of going a little far afield from the Santa Cruz 11, at least these announcements for tomorrow. And, you know, quite frankly, I'm interested in your story because, you know, first of all, you're very articulate and you tell it in great detail, and I have no idea how accurate you are, as I said, or how sane you are, for that matter.
I can address the sane part.
Well, you could address it, but would I believe it is the question.
Well, I was, before I could file for a divorce, and while I was in jail, I had to have psychiatric treatment. I was forced to take medications to alter my moods, and it was questioned whether I was sane or not. So I met with CIT on many occasions with a woman named Jasmine, and they gave me medication. They doubled my medication without consulting with me. If I didn't take it, they would put me in lockdown, but I was already in lockdown. And they gave me medication I couldn't identify. And when I asked them that the colors had changed, what were they giving me? The doctors or the nurses who were giving them to me couldn't explain it, but I had to take it anyway. So that was rather appalling. When I got out of jail, I was ordered to be put into a 30-day treatment program. My insurance, which is private, gave me...
You know, again, this really is very interesting and very specific, and you aren't really repeating yourself. You are talking about new information, but it's not relevant to the question. I mean,
the question?
Well, there were, first of all, the initial topic is events in the next 3 days, one of which is this hearing that's happening tomorrow. Another is the 420 celebration up on campus, where you're probably likely to have several thousand students standing up and saying we should be able to smoke an herb if we want to, or eat it, or medicate ourselves with it without fear of arrest, without fear of losing our jobs, without fear of losing our housing, our driver's licenses, and so forth. That's going to be happening, and there's going to be another event happening on Saturday. You're also a little off topic when I asked you, you said, I'm going to prove I'm sane, but then you sort of went off into a number of, but you only can to maintain, I'm the same kind of thing. I tend to go into a long loop when I start talking, but you got to get back to the issue, which is, it's not whether you're sane or not, of course. It relies on the credibility of your story, which has to do with, how much of the story you're not telling, what other people's perspective on the situation was. If I talked to your husband, would he say, yeah, she's a loony bird, she's been beating people up all week, or he would probably give me a different perspective than you would. And so with perhaps some other people. Perhaps not. I don't know. But you're the person in the studio, and you're telling, a very... a dramatic story, and also a story that is very, as I said, it seems very specific, and frankly, it sounds very credible to me, but that's not because I have any real evidence to believe it. That's one of the problems here.
I feel that this is all relative, because I feel we're being shut up, and whether you believe I'm a credible person or not, I passed a $2,000 mental exam from a PhD, Dr. Alloy, that public defender and my attorney insisted I pay cash for, and this report says she's fine. They released me from a private institution saying I was fine. My private physician, Dr. Vu, says I'm fine. But I feel all of this is relative because I am a person who has lived in this community for 33 years. I've done fundraisers for the Parents Center for Child Abuse Prevention. I'm known by a number of people. They're wanting to shut me up. And they're wanting to shut up the 7 of the 11. And
probably all 11 of the 11.
Or we're activists.
Well, they actually don't care if we talk. They just will send us to. They're trying to send us to jail. But,
exactly.
But again,
taxpayers' dollars.
Let's keep talking about this. But in the meantime, let me also continue with what I'm trying to do, which is to let people know what's happening tomorrow, the 20th at 9 a.m. in Department 6. There's this 7 of the 11 showing up for what will likely be, as I said, probably a postponement of the preliminary hearing. But it will be a chance to show solidarity for those folks and also to see them, to meet them, to greet them, to give them a big hug, or alternately to denounce them, if that's your intention. Also on April 20th, you can go up to campus. There's going to be probably a shutdown of some of the buses because historically the UCSC authorities do not want people to attend this huge 420 smokeout, even though people do by the hundreds, by the thousands. And if you want to see what happened last year, you can go to the Santa Cruz Indy Media website and take a look at that. That has some really huge pictures of the huge crowds that are there. Then on the 21st, on Saturday, there's going to be an Earth Day down on San Lorenzo Park, where I guess it goes from 11 to 4. And perhaps of more interest, since some regard this merely as an opportunity for green capitalists at $100 a booth to hawk their wares to those who have money, which apparently half the country these days does not. But the other half seems to be doing just fine. In any case, there is going to be a protest against smart meters happening down there, according to Santa Cruz Indy Media. I'm going to read a little bit about that right now, just to advise people as to what is supposedly happening. It's a um, see here. At the height of the smart meter controversy, this is a protest against the top staff at Ecology Action for publicly promoting projects that seriously undermine ecological and human health, according to the smart meter opponents, such as PG&E's smart meter program. At the height of the smart meter controversy last year, when PG&E was preparing to come into the county to illegally install, Ecology Action staff member Mullen Aldridge, according to this story on Indy Bay, appeared twice on a PG&E flyer declaring that smart meters are essential to a sustainable energy future. This is in spite of the fact that there is still no independent study showing environmental benefits from the smart grid and substantial evidence showing harm. But that doesn't seem to matter to Ecology Action, which collects millions of dollars from PG&E each year and also pays Mallon's six-figure salary. And then there's a flyer, a press release, a detailed analysis. Apparently Saturday is also Electromagnetic Radiation Action Day, so that's something else you can read about on the Santa Cruz Indy Media website. The activists who've written this ask you to meet at the Green Evolution Table. Apparently they paid $100 too, or I guess $50 if it was before January, if you got in early on the registration. On Saturday at 11:45 a.m., if you can't find us, look for the signs. We will have flyers for you to pass out. Please bring handmade signs. Here are some of the ideas to get you started. Smart grid equals human health and environmental catastrophe. Mallon Aldridge, number 3 at Ecology Action, is a corporate shill. Wireless proliferation is Silent Spring, Ecology Action, PG&E puppet. Smart meters hurt the environment and your health. Wireless equals Class 2B carcinogen, World Health Organization. We'll see you at 11:45 on Saturday. Thanks for standing against false climate solutions and corporate greenwash. And that's, again, an invitation to come on down. I added a little something to that story in which I suggested that people who are there should be advised that in past events at San Lorenzo Park, and I'm thinking perhaps of more conservative events, there has been action by the police to stop individuals from giving out flyers. I've reported on this for Free Radio. I don't recall at this point, the police didn't actually threaten me with arrest, but they did threaten others in the past. One time Dave Jacobs was threatened some time ago. We're talking a decade or more ago. Other people have been threatened for... The claim is that the San Lorenzo benchlands is privately leased for that period of time, and so if they want, they can evict you. They can declare you're guilty of trespass, sort of whimsically. I've generally responded to that kind of a claim by a group that has an area that is really open to the public, by simply telling them, well, you know, do what you need to do. You've got to arrest me. You've got to arrest me because you do need to do what your conscience tells you. My conscience tells me, as well as my constitution tells me, that I have the right to be here, and I'm going to continue giving out flyers and talking to people, perhaps signing up people on petitions, maybe even registering voters, which is often one way of deterring that kind of repression, because interfering with a registration of voters is a federal crime, I'm told, although I haven't heard that anybody in the Santa Cruz Police Department or the downtown neighbors, the Santa Cruz neighbors, or Take Back Santa Cruz, or the Farmers Market Management, that's the group that went after me a decade ago for flyering at the Farmers Market as they were attempting to eliminate the hippie element there. I don't know that there actually have been prosecutions for people who are giving out voter registration, trying to sign up voters and doing that at the same time as they're engaging in other political activity, at least not here in Santa Cruz. But, you know, it's useful to do. I do know that times have gotten a lot tougher in some respects. For example, it used to be perfectly legal, or at least the police didn't used to hassle you for flyering in back of Trader Joe's and the parking lot area that borders on the, if you know, the river, the San Lorenzo River area, where there's Mobo Sushi, a number of other restaurants, CVS. Now, for the last year and a half or 2 years, Trader Joe's has now colluded with the real estate management company to drive away petitioners under not just threat of arrest. They've called the police. They've filled out trespass citations. And to their shame, the police department has gone along with this charade with respect to the first the Constitution and the violations of the First Amendment that are involved, and said, okay, you got to leave. You're under your violation of trespass. And in fact, it has been found. Well, it was a court decision in 1980 under the Pruneyard case, not too far away in Cupertino, that if a shopping center wants to stop you from giving out flyers or petitions, they have to provide a time, place, and manner where you can actually do it. And Trader Joe's, as far as I know, has done nothing of the kind. Now, I'm still in the midst of getting more information on this, but it does seem that this is the kind of crackdown, and if you don't believe me, ask any petitioner on the street. If you see them, they, you can see them in front of New Leaf, you can see them downtown in front of, across the street from the Cinema 9 or in front of O'Neill's, and ask them if they're allowed to go to Trader Joe's, and they will tell you they've been driven away from there. And I have to say to my chagrin that I still continue to wander in and buy at Trader Joe's in spite of this clear violation of First Amendment rights. I suppose the day that I start flyering there and they tell me to leave will be the day that I'll begin not just boycotting, but making it a very public boycott and urging people not to purchase there until they restore First Amendment rights. But, you know, they got some pretty cheap, tasty stuff there, although some people tell me they don't like their stuff. I do, sadly enough. So anyway, you're here, and I'm here, rather, and you're there, all you listeners who may or may not call in. 427-3772 is the call-in number. I have received one email from a listener who has suggested that perhaps, Kate, you have been insulted by my saying that the mic is bigger than you are. So I wish to say, Shorty, that you better watch your step. Don't have any of your thuggy friends attack me in the email. So
I have a comment regarding Ecology Action in Pacific Gas and Electric. Regarding the smart meters, my son, Jared Genovese, owns a company called Genovese Energy Management. You can find him on Facebook. He's taken more classes through Pacific Gas and Electric and other Edison, Ohio Electric down south, and he's worked with Ecology Action extensively regarding smart meters. So if you want to see his viewpoint, you could go to his Facebook. He's taken over 1,500 hours of free classes through PG&E and Ohio Edison. He's currently a student at Santa Clara University, continuing to study smart meters and green building alternatives and the safety of them, as well as his knowledge on cell phones and towers. And
well, you haven't told us what he thinks of them. Does he like them or not?
He does like them, although he does appreciate the controversy, and like many things, you know, or sort of like with the FDA, many things were guinea pigs for many things. And so there are questions that have not been answered, you know, like medications and et cetera. So, yes, there are things about smart meters, but, I myself am a fan of Ecology Action and Karen Grobe and the people who run it.
You can get a counter-picket sign and picket the pickets if you'd like.
Oh, sure. Then I would be first to be arrested. I promise you that.
Well, I don't know. I mean, it depends.
Yeah, I'm not going back
to jail. Whether you're showing your panties or not, so to speak.
Yeah, nobody arrested me for that, but I'm certainly not going to press my luck.
Well, you know, I think...
But I would sign petitions.
I think it's interesting. I remember reading, probably folks who are listening may remember reading about this guy who took off all his clothes. I think his name is John, up in Portland, in order to protest the invasive TSA, Transportation Security Agency's strip down or get patted down or go through our scanning devices. And he was arrested for that because, actually, I think he was arrested because they wanted him to put his clothes back on. And he said, no, he's comfortable with nudism. He's done some nude biking and so forth, according to news stories about him. So if you decide to parade around naked on the grounds or with panties, or if anybody else does, on that, as far as I'm concerned, that's just fine. I've got no objection to that. And I think people who do, they have a right to their feelings, but they don't really have a right to impose their standards on
people in public places. That's been my view. I know that we must protect the children from naked people. I'm not quite sure whether why that's more dangerous than these armed thugs with badges and guns who are, you know, stalking up and down. As I came to the studio today, I drove through the Trader Joe's parking lot area there, and I saw two sets of black-clad security guards. I guess they're not carrying guns. They were carrying probably tasers and walkie-talkies and batons and so forth. Yeah, and it's just it chills me and it angers me to see this kind of thing happening, because I don't think it's a helpful way of getting more security. I think it is a way of essentially intimidating people from even thinking about taking alternative, being themselves, where that might mean questioning authority or defying authority. That's, of course, what the bank is all about. And you've written a message here that you wish to... I'll allow you to say it before I beat you into submission with my microphone here. Go ahead.
Or your baton. What I see happening at Trader Joe's or other places in downtown Santa Cruz or other places around the country, because I just drove from Arizona to Canada to Utah, and what I see is a fear factor with children. Children see these security guards walking around with their batons and their walkie-talkies and license plate numbers being read in and pictures being taken at every gas station and everywhere you go, your picture's taken. And children, my children in particular, who are 31, 15, and 13, feel fear. They're like, why are these people here? And why are the police on every corner? And why are they following us? And why is our license plate being taken down? What are they reading into it? Are we uninsured? Are we insured? Are we safe? Are we not safe? And, you know, I've taught my children to respect the sheriffs and the fire department and people in uniform. And I taught them the word sheriff when they were... before they were a year old.
That was your first mistake.
And now, probably, and now what I see is my children are actually questioning the authority or the guidance of these people in uniforms. My kids at this young age, but they don't have a voice. They have no voice.
Well, you know, it's interesting. When I was really young, like 5 and 6, I think I wanted to be a policeman. And I think there's this sort of... The problem is not that children are afraid of authority. The problem is that children are taught to be subservient of and unduly respectful for, even worshipful of, authority. That's far worse than being afraid of authority. If you're afraid of authority, you probably got the right idea. Because those guys with badges and guns can not only beat you up and kill you if they choose to do so, you know, if you're trying to escape, or they can taser you, they can pepper spray you, they can use these sound devices against you, and get away with it, usually. I mean, with the Occupy activities, there has been some pushback. I mean, UC Davis's chief of police just resigned, I guess, a day or two ago, after, you know, his officers had sort of casually pepper sprayed students who were just sitting there doing nothing other than engaging in protest. So, So, anyway, that's coming up for the next 3 days. I'd suggest people might want to check into those events. There's also a Wells Fargo event coming up on the 24th in San Francisco, and on the 23rd, too. The 23rd, I guess, in the afternoon, there's going to be a big teach-in and then a party, and a street party in front of the Wells Fargo offices, where the next day, on the 24th, Tuesday, there is going to be a shareholders meeting where there are people who are expected to go into Wells Fargo, which is the one of the biggest, if not the biggest, foreclosure fraud, we have to say person because corporations are people now, right? Mr. Wells Fargo or Ms. Wells Fargo, or probably mostly Mr. up there, but I haven't examined the gender content of the high corporate levels up there. Anyway, that's going to be happening, and I think there are going to be carpools going up there to Wells Fargo. Wells Fargo, of course, you know, is the bank that has the lease on the 75 River Street that either initiated the police activity or
were willing to collude with the police in essentially, well, one can't, it's hard to say, hard to blame the police department. The police department is to be expected, will try to get people to leave a building where a large corporation, even though the building has been vacant for 3.5 years and so forth, even though at the time it's... There are no trespassing signs up. In other words, one can understand police will move in and try to protect corporate property. However, the idea that 2-3 months later, after everyone has left peacefully, after the whole thing was resolved, thanks to negotiations between police and activists, and that the Occupy movement and at the autonomous action movement of and the 75 River Street, as described in the police reports. Now they go after people for felonies, and it's really, it ain't a good thing, folks. Luckily, there are at least 800 signatures online denouncing this in a petition to Bob Lee that I would encourage people to look at and to sign. And that the petition, the one of the best way to find the petition, I'm going to see if I can actually check this out. I think you should look for Santa Cruz. The Santa Cruz 11 has a website that is still in the process of actually being put together, but it's supposed to be coming up soon under the name Santa Cruz 11, spelled out, all small letters, .org. And I'm looking to see if there is a, perhaps, there's actually a website up. It says support the Santa Cruz 11, justice for the Santa Cruz 11, and there's a description. There's actually an ACLU statement of support. And there's an opportunity to sign the ACLU statement of support. And there are currently 921 people who've signed on to that through the Care 2 petition site. So if you want, just go to santacruz11.org and sign on to the petition if you feel this these charges should be dropped. You can also go and meet seven of the maybe actually I probably might meet all 11 tomorrow if you go at 9 o'clock. People are probably going to be kind of distracted, so don't feel slighted if you don't get hugs and kisses and a lot of attention, because people are very anxious about this whole process. But I think people are beginning to realize that there's broader support in the community to oppose this kind of real attack on constitutional right to protest, and the and also this massive overcharging by the district attorney's office. Not to mention the fact that the targets are, they should be Wells Fargo and the course and the banks and the war machine and a plutocratic system that doesn't seem to be getting much attention. You know, it's going to be politics as usual with Tweedledee and Tweedledum running for the president. And, you know, politicians like even good guys, if you will, people like Bill Monig, Democratic Party assemblyman, or Sam Farr. That's Fred's son, Sam Farr. Fred's a guy I knew in my youth. He had Sam's seat when he was in office 40 years ago. But Sam Farr is... you know, he votes for these laws that essentially he didn't. There's no attempt to stop the Obama-led war in any real way. Obama-led war, not just on, you know, the unfortunate poor in Afghanistan, but also upon the poor in this country and the citizens of this country who are both rich and poor, depending if you can all be, anyone can be taken into custody, held as an unlawful enemy combatant, or as he now calls it, an unprivileged enemy belligerent. See, they've changed the terminology. Aha! A phone call. So it appears either somebody is listening or perhaps we have a wrong number. Who knows? Let's find out. Hi there, you're on Free Radio with Kate and Robert.
Oh, hi, Robert. Sorry I've been listening to the show. Kate who?
Kate, identify yourself for our listener.
Well, what's your topic?
Good grief, Free. What is your thing, man?
Well, I'm at the Occupy. I was just at the Occupy.
Oh, okay. So you're going to give us a report from the... Well, it's 7 o'clock. You shouldn't be there. It's illegal to be next to the courthouse.
I have business in the building, buddy. I got 24-hour access.
You do you? I don't know about that. You doesn't mean you got business in the building. There's a no trespassing sign.
Doesn't apply to me. I got a card.
Yeah.
So they're at the Occupy. They apparently now they have, you know, mobile movie theater that was brought up, and I wanted to mention that tomorrow there'll be a hearing on Gary's trial to lower his sentence from 2 years to 6 months at 8:30 in Department 2.
Right. Actually, I'm glad you mentioned that. I did talk to Gary this afternoon. I wrote it down, but I'm having trouble with my computer again, and I didn't quite get to that part of the notes to myself. So, right, it's Department 2, 8:30 a.m., so you can go there and check out Judge Grim Gabble Gallagher giving Gary the, who knows what he's going to give him. He's already given him 2.5 years suspended. I guess the motion now is to try to claim that's an inappropriate sentence because all of the different so-called lodging crimes, which he was accused of, was it four instances of...
Four counts over three nights.
Four counts of 647E, which is lodging, that is to say, lying down on a bench with a sign that says sleep is not a crime.
Yeah, it's Penal Code 654, multiple punishment for this, a single course of conduct they decided in courts, which is obviously that's what he was doing, and obviously that's what was happening at 75 River. Those people shouldn't be looking at 6.5 years. They should only be looking at three at the most.
That's very heartwarming, actually. But actually, I would have to disagree with you. Speaking as a devil's advocate, I would say of this evil Gary Johnson who goes out, he gets arrested, then he comes back and sleeps another time. No, that's not a single course of conduct. That's a separate incident. I'm sorry, Mr. Attorney. You are
single intent and objective.
Yes. So I think you got to realize we're dealing with the law here, and the law can be a stern, harsh mistress. I mean, a harsh task, Moose-Goose. It's a difficult thing to deal with anyway.
How's the discovery going on yours? Are we getting the movies of Catherine Byers and the city manager going into that building yet?
Well, you know, I think that Catherine is, I don't know, we actually have, they haven't given us the 20 hours of video. So
I wonder why.
Well, that's an interesting question. You know, and one can speculate, but it could be simply that Bob Lee is too busy going to Project Connect, the homeless event, to woo the homeless people,
he
as he was doing
really
on Tuesday. He was there, oh yeah. And he was, I'm actually going to play my attempt to get him to talk, which is wasn't successful, I got to say. Anyway.
They were talking at the Occupy about your Huff meeting, and that somebody had overheard some of the city, you know, the DA people were getting a little worried from John Malkin's article on 75 River.
Rumor has it that somebody said that the DA people meet at the Santa Cruz Diner, and therefore they've been, you know, somebody heard them say, oh, we're worried, there's too much publicity here.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, what A, B, and C say to D, E, and F, I don't know. You know, I mean,
it's all hearsay, Robert. It's inadmissible.
It is inadmissible, and frankly, it's not necessarily credible. So, I mean, Bob Lee has not talked to me and asked for my reassurance that he asked me to stop writing my critical stories. So until Bob does that, although I am told that he did suggest to one of the defendants who asked him very directly, and this was during the Project Connect event, why are you pursuing us? Why are you pursuing reporters and journalists?
And only left-wing reporters. None of the Sentinel reporters are indicted.
Well, not yet, but no doubt those prosecutors are coming down any day
within
now.
That 20 hours of missing video, I'm
right.
Sure.
So, you know, so anyway, he was asked, and Lee said something to the effect of, according to this account, the defendant said that, well, he said that, bring your attorney into the office and we'll talk about it. So Bob apparently...
Which attorney will you be bringing, Robert?
I wasn't the person he was talking to.
Okay.
He's talking to somebody else. But I think that, you know, it might be interesting to have all 11 attorneys and 11 people crowding into Bob Lee's office demanding that he drop the charges. Not that he would be terribly interested in doing that.
He would be out on a furlough like he was when we protested there.
But, you know, we can laugh about it, but it's not... It's a very...
It's 6.5 years. If you don't fight it hard, you will just do it.
It's a difficult... It's a difficult thing. I mean, it's more likely that, you know, that they will try to get people... They're trying to get people to plead to one felony apiece,
mm-hmm.
and then that'll be dropped to a misdemeanor after a year if people are willing to pay the $30,000 extortion that...
We'll get all that in writing.
...that Wells Fargo claims is the damage done, although it's hard to imagine that kind of damage is really done to that building.
Well, the bigger they claim it, the more really they collect from their building. Insurance. You know, of course they're going to bid it up, you know?
Yeah.
It's ridiculous.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Free. Any other reports? What else happened at Occupy tonight? That, of course, happens every Tuesday and Thursday at 6 o'clock.
There was a woman from Auburn.
A woman from what?
Auburn. They're calling theirs 99% something. People didn't want to do the Occupy because it's already got a negative connotation.
Oh, great.
Yeah.
And so how many people attended the General Assembly?
Oh, you know, about the same number listening to your show, 7 or 8.
So it's become a, should we say, a less populated event.
Yeah, well, if there's no free rent involved, you know, why go?
Well, yeah, I don't know. I think it wasn't free. That rent required a lot of energy, and it was, you know, it required people risking arrest and getting cited and so forth, as people did for 2.5 months in front of the courthouse and down in San Lorenzo Park.
I mean, I mentioned they got an extra month there because the permit was moved into federal court. It would have been closed a lot sooner otherwise.
Yeah, I don't. You take the legal perspective, and I think it had to do more with mass action and the fear.
Both of them are very much a part of it.
Part of it, but I think, yeah. Anyway, yeah, we'll see what happens next. I know that Steve Plaich is still trying to engage in legal joustings with the city, even though the ghosts of the homeless folks who were driven away on December 8th seems to have vanished. I guess I was suggesting the ghosts might come back for a rerun.
Well, they should file claims against their missing property. That wasn't 8 tons of trash that was thrown away. That was people's tents and belongings.
Right. Well, we don't have evidence of exactly what was thrown away and what was not thrown away, but we do know...
They're supposed to record it. They're not supposed to just throw it into a dumpster.
And, well, they would no doubt claim that it was all trash. And
of course they would.
And there were, they claim, 3 pages of actual material that they took to the police station. One of our problems as activists is we're not very well organized, and we do not...
I wonder why.
Well, because people are more interested in legal solutions, perhaps,
no,
than in... yes. Well, in any case...
You need a hierarchy for organization. That's just unpopular.
Not necessarily. You just need people who are willing to go out and do the work and then communicate with each other. I don't think you need a hierarchy. But I do appreciate your calling in. In fact, you're the... you know, I would say you're a prime example of a lack of hierarchy. You disrespect any hierarchy that you see.
I don't conform to the consensus.
And
either.
I think that is, you know, not necessarily a bad thing.
Yeah.
Although it can be rather annoying and frustrating when we're trying to tie you up and put you in the closet. Anyway, thanks for calling. You do have a show coming up on Tuesday.
Well, I did.
Anything happening on Tuesday that you know of?
Well, I did. My worst. Carl and I are switching every other week. Hers is going to be next week. Maybe I'll show up for her show. But I did. I went back to find the old Blind Bear show we did. Like, that's the first show I did.
Free housing.
So Kate here is writing me notes like it's going out of style. Do you have any questions for our caller, Kate, or you got some?
Well, I'm in the government building, so
questions.
I don't know what you're doing.
What's that?
What are you talking about? I'm in the government building, so I don't know what you're doing.
Kate has been giving me her tale of woe about. The kinds of problems she's been suffering over the last couple of years, having to do with her being given a restraining order that's taken her away from her property, from her children. And she's fighting that, and she's very outspoken.
I'm homeless.
And you're homeless.
They took your children away?
Yes, they did. I'm not allowed to see my children. I have a 15-year-old and a 13-year-old. I miss both of their birthdays, Hanukkah, Christmas, everything.
Right.
Okay?
They are in fact being, I guess, cared for by her husband, supposedly.
Well, at least they're not in protective services.
They're not in protective services. Anyway,
I have a question for Bob Lee.
Yeah, but Bob Lee is unfortunately not on the line, but we do have Free can stand in for Bob Lee. Go ahead. Make your question.
I have a question for Bob Lee. I've been homeless for the last year, and these are facts, and you're welcome to ask this homeless man, Frank Lopez. You may know him. He started the homeless shelter garden up off wherever it is. Anyway, I ran into him 2 weeks ago, and he's supposed to be getting free housing in Watsonville, but the check never went through. He went to go home and his door was locked. His veterans check and his social security checks are missing. That happened to countless homeless people while I was at Occupy. They went to the mail at homeless shelter to get their checks and they weren't there.
115 Coral?
Yes.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah. Well, it's very mismanaged. You should sue those idiots for losing your mail. I mean, you're paying the same price that you would pay for a P.O. box. You know, you might as well just get a P.O. box and you'll actually get your mail.
If I may comment whether this is true or false, by the time the next check came that they were able to cash and they were poor and without food and ran out of food stamps, the previous check that was apparently lost was lost track of. I mean, these homeless people, after sitting in these offices on Emmeline Street for hours upon hours, taking buses, riding bikes from here to there, you know, and being arrested and having their IDs taken away for smoking cigarettes in a park or whatever.
They take your IDs away?
Oh, absolutely. I saw at least 10 people with their IDs stolen, with their backpacks stolen in their tents, and I saw it. I saw it.
Yeah. It's standard practice, harass the poor.
And, of course, you know, what I suggest people do when they do see this is to immediately go to a cafe and write up a report on this. What did they see? When did they see it?
I did that on SantaCruzPatch.com. Talked to Brad Cava every day. I went to Santa Cruz Patch and reported exactly what I saw.
Is not the place to go.
He's kind of a right-wing idiot. Brad Cava? So, you know.
Right, Brad Cava is actually...
as far as I know.
I would say he's less than sympathetic to a lot of the stuff.
But he printed everything I wrote.
Well, that's good.
Robert, you have police reports that you could fill out, right?
So I think, yeah, I do. And I think that you could come to the Huff meeting, which meets every Wednesday, 10 o'clock at the Sub Rosa.
Or at Badcock Santa Cruz. You can post it there, too, if the cops are involved.
You can also go to the Sub Rosa Cafe, where they have a notebook where you can leave a message. Or you can go on indiebay.org/Santa Cruz and write a story.
Mm-hmm.
Santa Cruz Indie Media. Indie Bay, that's IndyBay.
Or you can file a claim with the city.
Hang on, free. .org/Santa Cruz. One word, small letters. IndieBay.org/Santa Cruz. And you can also write a little story. It says, I saw this happen, blah, 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 blah. Free, anything else before
that's
we cut you off abruptly?
I'm about to run out on this payphone, so
good.
I'll see you, Robert.
Thank you very much.
Okay.
Actually, I'm glad Free does call in with his reports. Privileged character that he is, using the law library at night. Hopefully, he's actually working very hard to try to help his brother Gary, who has just gotten 2.5 years in jail sentence for sleeping on a bench with a sign, sleep is not a crime. And we'll be going in tomorrow at 8:30 for a sentence modification. He is not in jail right now. The sentence was suspended, but he can be jailed at any time. We have a caller, another caller. My goodness, the callers are just calling. Hey there, caller.
Hey,
welcome.
Uncle Robert.
Hey, you have something coherent to say there, David Silva?
Well, yes, I do. I have to say that, you know, Camp Occupy saved my life.
Uh-huh.
If it wasn't for Camp Occupy, I don't think I would have made it as a homeless person. I tried, not on purpose, but I tried to survive. It was very difficult, and now we're in transitional housing and facing eviction any moment, and my VASH has come through. I pick it up April 29th, and I go May 4th for the orientation, and I will be for the rest of my life. Only have to pay 30% of my income towards rent.
That
hallelujah!
Good.
It's about time.
Assuming
anyway, so I'm making it. So I'm going to be. I'm hoping to be home.
Assuming your checks actually come through, right?
Well, no, it's actually I have an appointment at the EDD to pick up the actual voucher. It's a veterans funded voucher through the housing program, but it's only veterans rules.
But don't you have to actually get a voucher every month?
No, not at all. That's a transitional program. This is the rest of my life. It's a permanent
okay.
program.
Well, there you are.
And just sorry, we just got 50 extra into Santa Cruz County here just this month. We were supposed to get only like 35. We got 50. Now we get another 50. So we're really scoring here big in Santa Cruz County. But that's because a lot of veterans have been showing up. A lot of people come back from Afghanistan, from Iraq, totally homeless with their families and children on the street starving. What is wrong with this country? Now, what is wrong with this country, Robert? Come on, this is ridiculous. Bob Lee, what the hell are you doing? They're just running a racketeering ring out of the DA's office. That's just racketeering trying to blackmail you guys into not go to jail. Innocent people. Bob Lee, get a job. You're fired.
Well, there you have it, a passionate listener. And I've heard that from other people who suggest that Bob Lee has been fired, but Lee apparently is not listening to the message. Who knows? Maybe that needs to be louder and clearer. Maybe it will be. You're tuned to Free Radio, 101.3 FM. I'm Robert Norris. In the studio with me is Kate...
Herlin.
Hey, Kate. And you can call in at 427-3772. I'm going to now play some street interviews, so don't go away.
It's about 7:10. Wind is getting windier and the day is getting darker. We're right outside New Leaf, and I've heard that Officer Winston is still on the beat.
He's still around here doing some petty thing, harassing a somebody for playing a didgeridoo, or perhaps they're standing too near one of those red meters or something. You know, don't these police really have something, I mean, more important to do? It seems to me that, isn't it fortunate that there are no gangs in Santa Cruz, no violence, no one is beating their spouse somewhere?
Let me ask you this. I see that one of those red meters you're talking about right across the street. Are people giving money to these meters much?
No, they're dead empty. They've already cut one down over there because, yeah, they're empty.
These are the spare change. We don't want no stinking panhandlers. Give your money to the bureaucrats, right?
Right. And, you know, they're just going to keep it and put it into, fixing the sidewalk. Since poor people walk on the sidewalk, they'll use that to pay their fair share.
Now, I haven't actually heard where the money from the so-called Imagine Change meters, the big red meters, of which there are, I think, 7 or 8 throughout Pacific Avenue, where that money actually goes. I do know that a number of them seem to have been vandalized originally when they were put in some months back, maybe even a year back. I'm not quite sure when they were put in now. It all fades and blurs. But I had heard originally that this went to fund a social service worker's offering homeless people money if they need to get home to their relatives. Stories, but no real hard evidence. Kate, any comment?
Stories on the meters.
You know what I'm talking about, the spare change meters.
Yes, the
anti-panhandler meters.
Right.
You give your money to a machine, don't actually deal with human beings. It makes them feel like maybe they have some rights and some
that's
dignity.
Very personable. I mean, that teaches our children real well. Don't hand the poor man who looks a little hungry with his dog a quarter, but put it in a fucking, put it in a machine.
He's not allowed to have a dog with him on Pacific Avenue panhandling. If you're well-to-do, you know, then you have a dog with you. But if you're a poor person and you're panhandling, that is illegal.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, how I feel about that is quite bitter, because I teach my children to at the least give these people that are needing some money. Don't question their integrity. Have you walked in their shoes? Have you had a conversation with them or their parents or their kids? Do we know their circumstances? We do not. If you have an extra quarter in your pocket, then I say you share it instead of buying bubble gum or some crap.
We have a caller, perhaps a bubblegum advocate. We'll see. Hi, you're on Free Radio with Kate and Robert.
Oh, hey, I don't know who Kate is.
Hey, say that again?
I don't know who Kate is.
Oh, well, you can meet her. She's here in the studio, but she's a guest today on the show, and you are also, you're entitled to say whatever you feel like, actually.
Is that Lawyer Kate?
That is not Lawyer Kate, no. That is
Toilet Cleaner Kate.
Toilet Cleaner Kate, as she describes herself.
Clean houses for a living.
House Cleaner Kate.
Toilet
In other words, an honest worker, not some kind of shyster shuffling papers while people get into deeper misery.
Well, toilet cleaner, lawyer, it's hard to tell the difference. But
thank you.
I just wanted to give you a newsflash right now.
Yes.
That whole Sleeple protest deal. The sleep protest in Philadelphia is apparently having a pajama march to the Philadelphia Stock Exchange.
Really?
With little kids. Meanwhile, in New York, at the Federal Hall, quite a historic building, sleep whole protest with guards and gates and everything. They just had a changing of the guard from the U.S. Park people to counterterrorism unit in New York City or something. So it's getting pretty crazy out there in Sleepland. I just wanted to pass the word.
Well, I know that caller. I recognize the intonations in your voice, and I believe you have your own website, peacecamp2010insider.blogspot.com. Isn't that right?
Wow. Got it in one.
Yeah, man. And you are a man who's actually done a lot of research on the local law regarding the criminalization of people who snooze at night. Is that correct? Outside, who are homeless.
Yeah, although I would say it's not really about sleeping. It's about protesting because I slept in plain sight and didn't get tickets.
More about protesting.
And it was more about protesting because as soon as I put up a sign. Boom.
Now, in fact, isn't it true that you are, in fact, if not related to, perhaps identical to the very person who, in fact, was given a 2.5-year sentence for sleeping outside? And the same individual who is going into court tomorrow to attempt to have that sentence somewhat, shall we say, shrunken?
No, because I got a 2-year sentence for protesting this time. I got a 6-month sentence for protesting last time, which is on appeal. And tomorrow it's for the second sentence, so we'll see what happens.
Right, well, tomorrow you're going to try to get that sentence compacted a bit, according to our previous caller, the well-known radio broadcaster Free the Land, or Free.
Oh, that's where the phone was. That's why the phone line was busy.
Yeah, he beat you to the punch there. Dare I call you Gary Johnson?
Yeah, I suppose you could have had you. But anyway, I don't want to interrupt. I wasn't even listening. I don't mean to be rude.
You're not interrupting. Well, you are. But that doesn't matter. I'm afraid Kate has a question for you, which perhaps you'd be willing to entertain.
Yeah, sure.
Thank you, fine man, for calling. I'm curious how much money and time you have wasted on this court stuff and the appeals. How much taxpayers' money or how much of your valuable time has it taken away from your work or from your family life or from your education or from your sleep?
Oddly enough, I got more sleep when I wasn't protesting because you cannot get sleep at a sleep protest. Police presence constant.
You slept at Occupy for 4 weeks.
We were at the courthouse for a month and City Hall for 2 months, and then I was at the courthouse for about a week. And it's eaten years of my life because there's all this court stuff. And
exactly.
Time. Hopefully if the appeal works, then all that silliness will stop. But at the moment, I'm really stoked that the rest of the country seems to be getting into the sleep protest thing because they're really going at it. Boston, Atlanta,
Egypt, the whole world is going at it. Absolutely. The whole world is furious with what's going on with Occupy Wall Street. But I feel that our time would be better spent, you know, going after pedophiles or rapists or child abusers than protesters, you know, who maybe are missing school, missing work, or missing time with their children while they go to appeals court or sit in the courtroom, where I have spent at least 20 hours in the past year just sitting there. You're not allowed to drink any water or coffee. You're not allowed to chew gum, and you're certainly not allowed to talk. And you just sit there and listen to all these poor, pathetic things. I mean, these people who are arrested for smoking cigarettes or marijuana or an open container. I mean, there should be some discipline, not jailing. Or homeless people carrying signs that say, I need food, or I need, you know, I'll work for food, and these people are arrested. Excuse me, Bob Lee. I'm livid.
Oh, we share the livid feelings toward who should be fired.
And Sam Farr, Gary Patton, where are these people, these heroes of our community?
I have very similar sentiments to share.
Well, if you have a toilet to be cleaned, I'll trade you a haircut or a beard. Shit.
So, Gary, you will be in court tomorrow, should we say, holding court in court at the court of Grim Gavel Gallagher, Department 2 at 8:30.
And then I need to rush over as soon as that happens to hear your stuff at, 9 o'clock?
It's going to be, I won't be there as a defendant. I will be there as a reporter and as a person in a bathrobe trying to encourage people to catch a few winks when and where they can.
So it's Becky, who's doing it tomorrow?
Tomorrow it's going to be Cameron, Ed, a guy called Ed Rector, Brent, Angel, Grant, Desiree, and Gabriella.
Oh, a whole bunch?
7 of them, yep.
Wow. Are they making a motion to dismiss because of the absolute absurdity of the charges?
No, their attorneys are wiser than that and also apparently want to make more money by having the case go on a bit longer. That's perhaps a little cruel. I think that they think they have a better strategy, which I don't know what the hell their strategy is because these attorneys don't talk to us, the defendants. They don't even talk to their own clients that much is what I'm hearing. And it's, you know, that's actually, there's an interesting opportunity tomorrow when we actually will show up in the same place. Though the defendants have been holding some meetings themselves, not all the defendants, some of the defendants. Initially, we were really divided from each other by the advice of attorneys that we that have nothing to do with each other because it appeared to be a conspiracy, at which point I suggested, indeed, we should have a conspiracy, the conspiracy to restore justice.
Exactly. I have an attorney that I've hired and paid $2,000 cash to. I missed two court dates because this attorney did not confirm and inform me that I had a court date yesterday morning. I called his office 5 times. I stopped by twice. I left him notes. I called twice the day before, 4 times the day before that, and never did he leave a note with his secretary. If Kate Perlin happens to call, please tell her she has a court date. Today I called him and he said, where were you? And I was like homeless, sleeping in the grass. I was at a phone booth.
So there's a warrant out.
Hello?
A warrant out for your arrest, you felon at large, is that right?
Absolutely, for missing a court date. My new court date is the 26th. For what?
I don't understand. I think a lot of these problems would be resolved if we just fired Bob Lee right now.
Well, you know, I would suggest that you make that decision, Gary, after some thought, and then deliver him his walking papers.
Oh, and sign the petition. There's 921 signatures already.
Oh, there's a petition?
Well, there is a petition not to so much fire Bob Lee, which might be more to the point, but to dismiss the charges against the Santa Cruz 11.
But that sounds good, but I'm really more interested in getting fired completely because then, you know, a lot of problems would go away with Bob Lee.
You have to start little.
Possibly, although, you know, these DAs seem to feel they are in a proud tradition of sort of the monarchical authority abuse that continues on and on and on, regardless of who is in the position.
Well, that's why DA is so critical because they have what everybody else, like, you know, passes the buck with. By saying, oh, they have unfettered discretion to do whatever it is that the DA wants. That's really what it comes down to. The cops have to do what he says. The city council, I mean, the county council unanimously voted a law, and they chose to ignore it because the DA said, oh, we're not going to press charges.
Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, and go escort them to their crimes while you're at it.
There was a law banning the installation of smart meters, but not only did Sheriff Wowak refuse to enforce the law, he was arresting people who were trying to enforce it themselves by blocking the installation of those smart meters. Gary, thanks for calling in. Let me roll with this, unless I give you the last word, because I know, you know, you're coming up tomorrow in court, and I hope that, you know, it will be a scintillating day.
All I have to worry about is remand.
Whenever I go to court defender? Now. Excuse
no, me. I have a really nice guy that's helping me out, Ed Fry.
Who has also been convicted of sleeping in front of the courthouse and also sentenced to 6 months, also on appeal, but who faces the additional burden of a contempt of court charge for what? Not wearing a tie in court?
And was also my cellie. How many other people can say that? At the protest, Ed was there, and in jail, Ed was there. And in court, Ed is there.
That's right. Thank you, Gary.
Thank you.
Bye. All right, man. Phone lines are open, 427-3772. I'm not paying these people to call in much, anyway. and I'm going to play some street interviews now, whether... whether you like it or not, Kate, so just hang on to your hat.
Let me ask you this also. You said Officer Winston, you're anticipating his arrival here today, and that's one of the reasons you're about to pack up from your guitar work.
Well, yeah, because he's really petty. He hates me and other people who are well-liked in the city, you know, musicians and artists. God knows what kind. He's got no education, right? He's not very intelligent. You know, it's like a pig if you put pearls before it or something.
Pearls before swine.
Trample them.
So, what about attacks on homeless people on the levee? Has that ceased for a while? Have you been safe in your possessions? I know you're a man who sleeps outside.
I have been, but that took pulling eye teeth, and it just so happens that my brother, the lawyer for the government, knows the Rangers boss personally. So that really helped us out a lot. Yeah. So, yeah, that really helped out a lot.
So your personal influence, is nepotism in action here?
Well, no, see, there is, this was before this new, they do have a new Chief Ranger. Her name is Heather Ryder. She's so, I think she so far seems like a decent person. She talks to Harley and I like human beings, with somewhat, she's way an improvement over anybody they've had so far, and over that, whatever, Wallace, that hothead.
John Wallace.
This woman seems professional, and gosh, I really hope that what it appears to be is, she seems a professional and, like, not shakable by little things like, yeah, the economy's going to hell and there's more homeless people than ever.
And what about your possessions in terms of people getting sleeping tickets, being driven away from the levee, which is where
okay, here's
people
one.
Sleep?
Tonight there'll probably be some desk jockey will come through and say, you can't sleep under the bridge. We'll say, sure. He'll say, you leave or we'll be back for tickets. We say, okay, great, we'll take the tickets because I've got a computer and a guitar. I'm not getting them wet. I told this one guy, I said, look, dude, I'm 60 years old. I'm not going out there. Make sure when you come back, I'll have all of my stuff marked because my guitar and my computer will be dry. I'll be dry and fine. I'll eat. I'll walk back across the bridge. I'll be home. They didn't come back. I had all my stuff packed and ready for them, dude.
Well, I know that I heard a week ago or perhaps a week and a half ago, they were threatening people under the Soquel Bridge with eviction.
Yeah, while it's raining. My attitude was, okay, good luck. Put us all in jail, and that'll be the last time, because somebody will come and say, hey, you can't do that. We can't afford this. These guys are acting like everybody doesn't know that every city in California is still in a crisis. Don't these pigs read the paper since September of, 2007?
And there you have it, the word from the street in 2012 by that man with a guitar.
Ricardo Lopez.
Thank you, Ricardo.
Loving you, bro.
Do you have any comments on that, Kate?
Absolutely. I saw over the summer while I was homeless sleeping behind the sheriff's station on, I think I saw it on Ocean Street. I lived there for 3 or 4 months, I believe with the protection of some sheriffs with integrity and then some who didn't have it, who tried to chase me away. I actually saw hypodermic needles. I saw homeless people's skateboards without wheels. They'd wake up in the morning, the wheels were gone, their bikes were stolen, their IDs, their books, their instruments, and they were left. And I turned this into the sheriff's station. They were left alcohol, like Gatorade that was half full of vodka or gin. I found hundreds of these bottles and drunken, disoriented homeless people that couldn't find their IDs, had no money. Some of them didn't even know who they were. And it was appalling. And I found hypodermic needles. I packed all this stuff up and I carried it to the sheriff's and handed it to them.
So you're the one that resulted in the destruction of Occupy Santa Cruz, by the sheriffs. Actually, they didn't destroy it. It was the police. Sheriffs made a big attempt to do that, though, in October, claiming there was a mega use of needles and all kinds of problems. But my thought was there was actually more problems when there was when there wasn't an Occupy Santa Cruz. It was just dispersed in different places. What's your thought about that?
Well, I actually saw bags of marijuana confiscated by police with IDs and with backpacks.
So actually, it could be a form of self-medication, from healing, from entertainment.
For who? The police or the homeless?
Well, for the person who has it, well, she or he has it.
Well, exactly. I felt the same. Many of these people actually had medical licenses to have marijuana, but I myself actually had a little pipe that was given to me and a bud that was confiscated, that was taken away.
Right,
I wasn't given a ticket.
Yeah, but yet you say you took needles and you're explaining with some alarm about bottles of alcohol.
Well, this was over the levee. This was along the levee. This was not at Occupy. I did not see any needles at Occupy, very little alcohol use. There was 24/7 security. If people came into the park drunk, they were asked to leave. They were escorted by very fine, intelligent people who tried to keep Occupy intelligent and respected, even though there was such controversy about the homeless people being there. But the homeless people actually cleaned up all the trash and were just stoned and funny and trying to remind us of where they have been in the past and being our elders, most of them. Where I saw the hypodermic needles and the alcohol was along the levees. And I definitely saw it there when I was released from jail in October. I was in jail for the whole freaking summer. And I was released October 2nd with no money, no ID, blah, blah, blah. So I went to the levee to find some friends to do a drumming circle. And literally I found hypodermic needles. Oh, absolutely. I lived there for 4 weeks in a tent, cold. I met hundreds of people. I was Kate, the person who gave out cigarettes and food. And I was Kate who lived at the Best Western for 3 months and brought in bananas and yogurt and whatever food I could take from Best West that had free included breakfasts. And the management there was wonderful. They loved me. Absolutely. No, it was the Best West because I wrote a peace. I wrote a peace sign on my wall when they closed down Occupy. I just sort of channeled John Lennon, I think, and I just made a peace sign and Imagine and Blackbird Singing of the Dead, and I wrote that on my wall. And they charged me $750 to clean it up, which I paid. I paid it, but they didn't. They banned me, even though they took my money. And in addition to $12,000 I paid to live there for 3 months. You know, and speaking of Wells Fargo, while I was occupying, I learned that $5 billion was taken out of corporate banks and put into local union banks, credit union banks. And that's a fact. You can refer to Travis T. Hipp from KPIG Radio. He will confirm that. But another quick one, I know this isn't all relevant, but every hour and a half, a veteran commits suicide. What's up with that?
Feeling guilty about having murdered so many people overseas, perhaps.
Gee, have some nightmares, a little bit of schizophrenia or something?
Shows the veterans have a conscience after
all. Skeletons in the closet?
All right, so time to move on and back to some of these interviews. If you want to call in, you can. 427-3772.
So your usual companion here, Brianna, who's been around for a while, but has also complained of some undue police exposure.
That's because she tells the truth to them. She demands her rights. I mean, it's like a great man once, or just recently said, nobody's rights are so restricted and violated as the homeless. So Brianna talks shit to them that they deserve and goes and hands them back the tickets and stuff. I was sitting one time in the cafe and somebody says, you better get out there. Brianna's handing back the pigs their tickets. I said, oh, Brianna.
What kinds of tickets is she getting?
Oh, they nuisance tickets for her dog or some nuisance thing. They hate her because she stands up for her rights. And a woman telling them, outsmarting them and telling them the truth. Oh, they're in shock. They hate it. They're like, duh, you can't say that.
So Brianna continues to live on. Hey, man.
She's a legend, dude. She handles them. She's a legend. They hate her. I hope she doesn't get in any more trouble.
Next time we'll hear the two of you playing. And thank you.
Thank you.
No? We'll see. A very... So how is it going with the genetically engineered food petition? What exactly is this petition you're circulating?
This is a petition to label GMO foods in California so we can get it on the ballot in November.
And is this a petition for which you're getting a certain amount of money per signature?
I am not. I'm a volunteer, and I've been helping organize the team in Santa Cruz since July last year.
You're standing shivering outside the New Leaf Market, and your table is sort of separated from you. It's sitting in this lone, barren spot, kind of between the crosswalk, the fenced-off area, the empty, many months empty kiosk, and of course where you're standing next to the New Leaf building. And you're not allowed to be here for more than an hour?
The table isn't allowed to be there for more than an hour. So it's in the spot away from me because I like to stand on the opposite side and look out to the street and see who's coming.
And how are the people treating you? Getting a lot of signatures? Nasty weather like this is hard to get people to stop.
Yes, it's very cold. And just a lot of people have signed. Just the people that won't sign just still won't sign.
You're going to get them, aren't you?
Yeah, I'm going to get them. If I ask them enough, they'll sign.
We've been talking with?
Tara Locke.
Thanks, Tara.
Thank you.
Okay, well, today is Wednesday, April 11th, 2012. I'm in front of Logos,
And we see a nice, well-lettered sign, a little weathered, spare a buck for good luck. And it's got a picture of a, it looks like a kitty cat with a medallion, perhaps. And you have your black pooch. What's your dog's name?
Cleo.
And you are? What would you like to, who would you like to be today?
Poe.
And Poe, you're new in town.
Yeah, I just got here today.
And you've already received a warm welcome from the hospitality squad.
Yeah.
What happened? You were sitting on a bench with your sign and your pooch lying nearby, and, of course, your telltale backpack and your bare feet with your shoes off. What did she say to you?
She told me that I couldn't sit on the bench, that I needed to, and I couldn't be in front of any of, basically, she told me I couldn't be anywhere near any city property, and that I couldn't sit on the bench, and I couldn't stand in front of any of the stores, and that my dog couldn't be here because they recently allowed dogs on this street, so my dog's no longer allowed because of
interesting,
traveling dogs.
Strange. No traveling dogs in town.
Right.
It's no panhandling dog. You see, they're afraid you're misusing this dog to generate sympathy. It's okay to have a child with you, but not a dog.
I guess so.
Now, you might want to adopt the dog, and if the dog is your child.
Yeah, the dog, I get a lot. I've been getting hassled a lot for her lately, just in California in general, actually.
How old is this pooch?
11 months.
And is she a vicious dog?
No.
Is she a service dog?
Yeah. She's been a service to me. It's good to have an animal, especially sometimes you wind up, traveling alone or whatever. It's better to have a dog with you.
Where was your last stop?
My last stop before California?
Before this city.
Before this city? It was in, San Jose.
How was that?
Fine, yeah.
Advised by the police that your doggy was not to be allowed?
They almost didn't let me on the bus because I didn't have a cage to put her in.
And have you tried getting on the bus here in Santa Cruz?
No, I've just been walking around trying to sell my necklaces.
Interesting.
I met up with some people. Hung out at that little anarchist cafe. That's pretty chill.
Yeah, I was there earlier today myself.
That's a chill place.
Well, here's a small change donation, although I don't think I want any necklaces at this time.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it. Dollar of the
I'm not paying him for the interview, folks. I want that to be made clear.
You are not paying me for the interview, and I am a girl. Just so we're clarifying things.
All right.
I love you.
And this is a her, and I'm obviously a little gender challenged here. So
I'm gender challenged. I'm genderly challenged.
Are you often mistaken for the other gender?
Yeah, but I just had to say it. You know, I am. That's why I'm not mad.
What is your own gender identification?
I'm a gay boy trapped in a lesbian's body. How about that?
We'll have to think about that one, folks.
Yeah, I don't know.
Anyway, and we've been talking with
Poe. Yeah. Poe folk. You've been talking to some Poe folk.
Thank you, Poe.
Yep.
And may humanity be with you. Hi, we're out here at the Project Connect. It's about 15 or 20 to 11 on April 17th. We're talking with
Daniel Britt.
And Daniel, you say that police had unusual information when you suddenly found yourself outside trying to relax.
I had just slept overnight. I was my residence, temporary residence, was River Street Shelter. I helped serve breakfast there or have breakfast there. I got in my car and went over to the park to just, sit back and relax. And as soon as I parked my car from 6 o'clock in the morning by 6:30, 7 at the latest, Santa Cruz motorcycle police pulled up on me, rolled up on me real quick, said, here, give me your license, and they gave me a camping ticket as if I had been sleeping all night in my car at what's the name of that park over there? Harvey West Park. When in fact, I can go, when this happened, I talked to the director of the River Street Shelter.
Monica Martinez?
She will give me a piece of paper saying I had residence the day that the ticket was issued. She will sign that I was living.
Good for her. I'm glad to hear that. The first time I've actually heard that she'll do that. How long ago was all this?
It was about three, four months ago.
And has that ticket disappeared?
No, I just have not paid that ticket because I went reported it to the director in the office of River Street Shelter, and the director said, I will give you a statement if you have to appear in court, if you get a court date that you have to fight that ticket, I could take that and say, hey, I lived here, and they have to...
Excellent. Now, is this Nancy Lou Biscotti or Monica Martinez? Do you know who it was who said this?
She drives a black car at River Street Shelter.
Is she sort of young and gay, or is she somewhat older?
She's not gay.
By gay, I mean young and happy.
Yes, yes. Okay, yeah. Gay meaning enjoying life. Yes.
Well, it could be Monica. It could be Nancy Lou. And you have...
No, Nancy Lou does the loft.
Yes.
So I was in loft. At the time, I was living in a shelter. Yeah. So it's the director of the shelter.
All right, so that would be Nancy. Well, the director of the Nancy Lou does the loft, and that's the shelter part of the whole homeless service.
No. Nancy Lou's in her office handling the loft only.
No, it wasn't her, you don't think.
They have a lady in a black car that's about this tall. I can't remember her name.
She seemed very young.
Yeah, well, she's about 27.
That sounds like Monica. It could be. So, have you had any further encounters with the police that might, where they might have said, aha, you haven't paid your ticket? Did that ever happen?
No, they've never rolled up on me.
Well, that sounds good to me. We've been talking with...
Daniel.
Thank you, Daniel.
Looks like we have a mic problem. I'm switching mics here. That interview, unfortunately, led me to a mistaken impression. My apologies, by the way, for sounding far away. The mic went out, the main mic. I don't know why, but it did. And I guess you've heard me on the secondary mic, but hopefully you've been able to hear some of what I've been saying. That interview at the Project Connect 2 days ago, which was a one-day event where... service providers get together and provide socks and driver's license access and health care access and dental access and bike repair, all kinds of things for homeless folks. And it's a great one-day effort, which I've criticized as being a one-day effort. It doesn't really address fundamental issues, and it seems more like a publicity stunt for social service providers and a way of kind of involving people in social service activity who are volunteers and swelling that nonprofit base, you know, which to some extent has some value. But in terms of the failure of nonprofits to actually address real shelter over the last 3 decades means that it's a failure. And that isn't something that's being acknowledged or addressed. Monica Martinez, the director of the Homeless Lack of Services Center, as I call the Homeless Services Center, has repeatedly refused to issue documentation to homeless people who weren't a part of her program, that their program had no space the night when a cop gave them a sleeping ban ticket, which would make them eligible for the necessity defense. And I thought... I came to the premature and hasty conclusion listening to this last interview that somehow she'd changed her policy. When I ran into her, you'll actually hear me describing this later in this tape, at this event where she was preening herself and wandering around and along with other notables like Mayor Don Lane and DA Bob Lee, who were both at the Project Connect. I commended her. Actually, the first thing I said to her was rather critical. I said, well, Monica, I hope you feel good, and your testimony was able to send Gary Johnson to a 2.5-year jail sentence. So you feel, you know, and instead of blowing me off, she said, well, what could I have done? And I said, well, I explained to her what she could have done, which had to do with, don't say we had a bed open on the night when he was... given tickets, but say rather that no one would have understood or appreciated that there were beds available, because generally speaking, there are no beds for the overwhelming majority of homeless people, and therefore it is a false and a mythical concoction by the district attorney to
win their legal case, to win a conviction against a homeless person, a really cowardly and despicable act by the district attorney's office, to give the jury the misimpression that there's adequate shelter in Santa Cruz on that night, because there isn't. And she needed to bring that up, and she did not. And she should have known that. She was an advocate in Los Angeles. She's been called to court before on these issues. She's been a willing colluder in the criminalization of homeless people. And unfortunately, because I perhaps was rolling along with the joyful attitude that day at the Project Connect 2 days ago, I get deluded by the fantasy that she had somehow done what she had said she was going to do, which is, A, issue letters that would say, our shelters were full that night, dismiss the charge. But in fact, that's not their policy. Their policy is not to issue such letters. It is only to dismiss, to send the list to the city attorney, a list of people who are on their waiting list. And if you're on their waiting list, then you get your charges dismissed. So you've got to be a part of their racket, a part of their operation, to get that kind of privilege, which to me seems very unconstitutional. You shouldn't have to be a part of a private organization in order to maintain your public rights under the Constitution. But that hasn't been challenged in court. The second thing she's refused to do, and that she lies about, because I think that has to be what it is. I can't. She's so robotically repeating a mantra that she's learned by heart that has nothing to do with the reality, which is that that the homeless lack of services center gives out little receipts or proofs of documentation that a person is on the waiting list. So if a cop comes up to you, you can show them this. It may not stop them from giving you a ticket, but it might, because it means that the ticket is going to be dismissed. And if they do give tickets, it could be the basis ultimately for a lawsuit against the police department, because they are engaging in willful citations that they know will be thrown out by the courts. So she has repeatedly lied about this with a big smile and a friendly tap on the shoulder. I mean, she's very good at it. Anyway, let's hear some more from Project Connect, the day that I spent there.
So it's 10 to 11 here outside the Civic Auditorium in the parking lot, where there's a number of large signs describing different tables and booths that do different things. One's event checkout, giveaways, where you can get socks and nail clippers, and according to the signs, gloves, men's razors. There's a table covered with books, presumably for giveaway or donation, and I guess Daryl, who's concerned about establishing an eco-village, has his own table without a sign. There's bike repair, which is repairing bikes as you wait. Foot care, all kinds of stuff is happening. And very few people are out here, though, yet. Usually this is the area, as I remember from last year, where lunches, at lunchtime there's a lot of activity. There's a medical tent, there's a veterinary services tent where the SPCA is operating. Hey! We got our table over here.
It should also be said that this all was taking place in the parking lot next to the Civic Auditorium. If you're a person who knows the Santa Cruz scene, it's right across from the City Hall. Most of Project Connect took place inside the Civic Auditorium. I was outside with a table for HUF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, giving out literature, which is now posted on indiebay.org/Santa Cruz. And you can actually read the flyer that I wrote and was good distributing. Actually, there were five or six of them of different kinds. A lot of them about the Santa Cruz 11. We were giving out little stickers that said, vacant buildings are the crime. Support the Santa Cruz 11. And some people were quite pleased to take these stickers and put them on their chests. Unfortunately, City Council candidate Micah Posner was not one of them. When he was invited to do that, he refused, saying it might compromise him because it was, quote, too controversial.
And a lot of folks with Project Connect t-shirts.
There's a long line of folks who want to get in, and everybody's been giving numbers and being let in a group at a time. And very few of them are making it out here, though, so I'm beginning to think that our notion of being outside is not such a hot idea. But we are giving away a lot of flyers. Most popular is the What's Next Drop the Charges flyer. It has to do with Occupy Santa Cruz and the 75 River Street defendants and the attacks on them by D.A. Bob Lee. And then there's another one, Real Issues Downtown, which talks about intrusive surveillance, selective enforcement, laws against survival, sleeping, and poor in public spaces, police harassment, false charging and violence against those who resist, illegal destruction of homeless survival gear, and a variety of other. Santa Cruz and actually concerns in every city. We have flyers galore, and the only thing we're missing here is a Huff sign so people know who the heck we are. And mostly we have staff, people with badges and Project Connect t-shirts walking by. So that's one of the things that's happening here. Looks like people are being escorted around rather than more freely walking about as happened last year, but that could just be my paranoid impression, and you never can tell what's really cooking here. We'll find out. All right, end the sleeping van. Sign up here.
People don't need to sleep.
Here we go. Here's a man who's sleepless.
Sure.
We're talking with a Project Connect volunteer who's
Donna Marie.
And you say you're one of a close intimate of yours just got hassled, or should we say locked up, or what happened?
For not reporting to probation for the Prop 36 that was dropped a year ago that had no organization to it at all. And he got 120 days for that.
Well, they're trying to give him a home. They think he's homeless, so they want to put him in jail. That's what they call housing the expensive way.
Right. And not only that, but it's a waste of the taxpayers' money. I mean, absolutely, do not need to put these people in our jails. 50 days, the judge gave him an extra 30 days for not reporting on January 6th because I broke my arm, crushed my arm, and was totally immobile for 3.5 months, and the judge did not accept that as a reasonable excuse.
Name of the judge?
It was a female, I'm not sure. Department 7. Department
Simons. Ariadne Simons.
And she gave him an extra 30 days for turning himself in on Friday. After everything was done and settled, my arm is back that I'm able to use it. He was the only one to take care of me. I couldn't even butt my own pants. And she didn't accept that as an excuse.
Did you speak about that in court?
Yes, I spoke to his lawyer about it. And he presented...
Who was his lawyer?
His lawyer was Mr. Mace, the Italian, little Italian man. Mace...
A public defender, I take it.
Yes, he is. Yes, he is.
Your husband was convicted, of heroin possession?
No, absolutely not. No drugs. It had nothing to do with drugs. It was from an old charge of...
Because 36 is usually related to, drugs.
And the reason why was because he was with down on the river with a bunch of people, and they accused him falsely of them being his with no identification on it. The case was thrown out of court, but he had to attend a school for that. And he attended the school. He completed the classes. They closed the Proposition 36 department down completely, and he was just supposed to be on probation for a year, and because he did not report to probation, which we tried to, but Rick Masterson was extremely busy with all of this.
He's a probation guy?
Yes, he is. And he was the only one handling all these cases, and we went in there twice to report to him, and because he was picked up again down at the river, no charges on him at all, but they ran his name, and they found out that, and he went in, and now he's doing 120 days.
His full name is?
Kurt Allen Medeke.
Spell it.
M-I-E-D-E-C-K-E. Medeke.
Is there any way people can write to him in jail?
Absolutely.
And the best way, he's at the Santa Cruz County Jail. Do you have his prisoner number?
I don't right now. He just got in, like I said, this morning, so I haven't gotten it yet. But he's in E, if that makes any difference.
And again, his full name is?
Kurt Allen Medeke. M-I-E-D-E-C-K-E.
And we've been talking with?
Donna Marie Bruni.
Thank you, Donna Marie.
Thank you.
We're talking with...
We're almost out of time here, but Kate, you have a tale of how police, gave your car a going over?
Yes, I was sleeping in my car. It was 2:30 in the morning, and two sheriffs came with bright lights. They searched my car, they searched me, and they told me that it was illegal to sleep in your car anywhere in Santa Cruz County. all police sheriff's cars were given my license number and my name completely, and nothing was done about that. I was put on 4-year probation, and I attempted also to go to probation to report, and it was closed on Fridays. And then when I did get in, there was a long line of people who hadn't bathed. They smelled like urine and stool. I got ill. When I finally got to see my probation officer, I told her I had a doctor's appointment in 1 hour, and she disciplined me for not calling her and reporting that to her. She said that all my doctor's appointments needed to be reported. And I paid a $160 fee for a parenting class. It's outrageous what the probation department has done. My fees are $40 a month. I have to report and fill out a report card. I told them I was living at the Best Western. I told them who my husband was. And they told me to move out of the Best Western to go to the homeless shelter where I went. And what I was given were clothes that were full of lice and bugs. I found little containers of alcohol all over the place. I asked homeless people about them, and they said that they were everywhere, full, and they were empty in the morning. There was an overflow. I made tons of banana bread, dropped it off, was never thanked by anyone, left my address and who I was, and they never thanked me. And I was appalled by the woman. I don't know how much she makes. I don't know who the heck she is. But I have written to her at least 20 times. She has never once responded. I've written to Bob Lee. I've written to the public defenders. I've written to the Santa Cruz Sentinel. Who the heck is running the homeless shelter?
And thank you. We've been talking with that woman of strong opinions. Sign out, please. Your name again is...
My name's Kathleen Perlin, P-E-R-L-I-N. You can look me up as Kathleen Keesler, K-E-E-S-L-E-R, on Facebook. I'm probably the most famous person
this station will ever know. You're a real pain in the Keesler.
K-A-T-H-L-E-E-N, Keesler, as in Keesler Airport in New York.
Spell it one more time.
K-E-E-S-L-E-R. My family are military. My brother Marlon was in the Gulf War.
We'll try to forgive him. Thank you for your stories, for your experiences, for coming into the studio. And listeners, thanks for listening to Free Radio. We don't expect Uncle Dennis, that's the royal we, me, myself, and I, probably Kay, too, if she knew anything about it. Uncle Dennis with the cream to the dregs, he will not be coming in tonight, I don't think. I think he's on a fishing trip. You know, you've heard of Bob Lee's fishing expedition. Well, Uncle Dennis has his fishing trips. So these, everybody's fishing around. It sounds a little fishy to me, I got to tell you. But again, I remind you, tomorrow at 8:30, Gary Johnson tries to get his 2.5 years condensed, at least 2 years, the 2.5 years condensed to a 6-month charge because it's a so-called continued course of conduct, according to his legal eagle associate, Free. And his attorney, Ed Fry, will be trying to do that in Department 2. Then a half an hour later, 7 defendants will look to see if, I guess, the prosecution is ready to proceed with a preliminary hearing. I would assume they aren't, but you never can tell what tricks Uncle Bob Lee and his subordinates have up their sleeves. Now you see them, now you don't. That's at 9 o'clock in Department 6. And then all day, there's going to be an event up on campus. That's the smoke marijuana, whether they like it or not, if you want. And that's going to be happening, I guess, it's happening in, I don't exactly know the location of it on campus, but I think if you want to get to it, you can.
You'll smell it.
And it probably will leave a strong scent. The Meadow, I think it's the Great Meadow where that's happening. I've got those phrases come back to mind. Then on Saturday in San Lorenzo Park, there's going to be a smart meter protest at the Ecology Action Booth around the Earth Day events, where the green capitalists will be attempting to sell you their wares and get you to wear what they've got. So that's happening. I'll be back on Sunday, the next day, with some reports on some of that, if I get to it or get somebody to tell me what went down. And that's going to be happening on Free Radio here at 9:30 in the evening. No, it's the morning. It is the morning, yes. 9:30 a.m. I'm getting a little punchy here, but I will be back 9:30 a.m. for a longer show, 3.5 hours until 1 o'clock. Thanks for being with me again, those of you who were. And in the meantime, sign the petition to dismiss the charges, free the Santa Cruz 11, essentially restore to Santa Cruz. It's not, I mean, it's, we're not, it's no, believe me, it's not going to be a paradise if this is, gets done. It's going to help 11 people. But I think it also helps the community because we need to be reassured that peaceful protesting is not going to lead to felony prosecution. I mean, that really has to be something we can count on. Again, I thank you and good night.
Welcome to From the Creams to the Dregs. And this is Rick with my friend Coral here. Say hi, Coral. Say hello.
Hi, Coral.